February 7, 2017.
Larry, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you.
All right. Did Steve explain to you what this project is exactly?
Well, he told me that you're an Italian, and he said there's not enough good Italian Americans in the Midwestern area. And he said that it only makes sense that you and I talk because you're trying to do something to make Italians look good.
Great. Yeah, this is a collection of interviews I've done with Italian-American major leaguers, and it's going to be compiled into a book. And the idea is just, you know, preserve for history the legacy of Italian-Americans in the major leagues, players, coaches, executives, umpires, etc. So that's what we're doing. Okay. So what I'd like to do is we'll talk a little bit about your family history, your Italian background, and then we'll go into the baseball stuff, okay?
Sure.
So what can you tell me about your Italian background, the family history?
Okay, so I am pretty much 100% Italian. I say pretty much because there's a dab of German high up on my mom's side, but I consider myself 100% Italian. There's just my great-great-grandfather on my mother's side was German, but everybody else in my family's names, was Molinos, the DeLeos, the Marisis, the DeGilios.
Wow.
We're all Italian.
All right. So do you know, so that was your great-great, who came to the States from Italy?
It was my great grandparents that came to the state.
On both sides?
No, on my mother's side, it was great-great-grandparents.
Oh, wow.
On my father's side, it was great-grandparents. And then my grandfather on my father's side was a veteran. I'm guessing it must have been World War II. But he died very young. He died when my father was 20. When he came back from the war, he was like a lieutenant in the war and came back, and he had a hard time with alcohol when he came back from. He never really recovered. I guess today they probably would refer to it like post-traumatic stress, with the veterans go through.
Yeah.
But when he had come back, he drank a lot. And so he passed away young when my father was 20.
Okay. And what about our...
Yeah, we're from, we're Sicilian.
Okay.
So we're from Palermo.
It's on your dad's side?
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, no, on my mother's side we're from Palermo. On my dad's side we're Etruscan.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Tuscany near Florence?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. So, did you grow up with a sense of being Italian?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my grandmother spoke fluent Italian. I wish to this day that she had taught it to us, but she only yelled at us in Italian.
Sounds like my grandmother.
Yeah.
Which, grandmother on your dad's side, your mom?
On my dad's side.
Uh-huh. So...
She's of my grandparents, we just recently lost my grandfather.
Oh.
So I only have one grandparent left. My grandmother, maiden name Marisi, she's from Sicily, and she's second generation.
That's on your mom's side. How is that name spelled, Dan?
MORICI.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
And on my dad's side, my grandmother's maiden name was Gattardo.
Gattardo.
So, my grandmother, she went by, I gotta think about this. We called her Nonna.
Yes, of course.
But, yeah, so she, I know her middle name was Carmella because we named my daughter Lucinda Carmella.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah, her first name was, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I'm not thinking about this. She passed away in 01 from cancer. My grandmother on my mom's side is Angie. Oh my gosh, it'll come to me.
That's okay. We don't need those details, really. Well, that's good. Now, I assume that as a kid you played baseball.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I played a lot of sports. I didn't exclusively play baseball. I played mostly basketball was the sport that I enjoyed more than anything. Baseball I really enjoyed. I enjoyed being a catcher. But as you know, the higher levels you go, the more difficult it was.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't play outside of high school. I went to Loyola Academy in Wilmette, and then I did not play outside of high school. I did play basketball through high school, and then in college I went and became the manager of the Northern Illinois men's basketball team.
Okay.
And that's how I became introduced to officiating, because one of my duties as the manager was to let the basketball officials in and make sure that if they needed anything, and then I gave them their paychecks for the games, and I got to know the officials. So that was my first introduction to officiating at a high level.
Interesting. So when you got out of Northern Illinois, did you go straight to law school?
I did.
Okay.
I did. I went, my goal was, I wanted to go and be a Division I basketball official and be a lawyer.
Uh-huh.
And that was kind of the blueprint that I had, and that was from my experience in Northern Illinois, where a lot of these guys had another business. There were several that were attorneys. And so my goal was, okay, I'll be an attorney in the Chicagoland area, and I'll referee Division I basketball, and, not necessarily for the money, even though the money was good, I just really enjoyed officiating.
Yeah. Interesting.
So it was my part-time job as a basketball official through law school, and I used to go and referee. The highest level I ever got to was Division II. I was going to the Division I camps when I was about 23, 24, and I made the turn into baseball, which was a very, very strange decision, because I was working for a federal judge, a Greek judge, Judge Kokoris.
Uh-huh.
And he had, at the time, he was the chief judge for the Northern District of Illinois. So he had four clerks, and I was one of them. And two of them were full-time, and two of us were still in law school. So we were, like, breeding to become full-time clerks if we were good enough. It's kind of like a stepping stone. Well,
yep.
The other part-time clerk that I worked with, and not that it matters, but his name was Rudy Manassian. And Rudy's father worked for the Texas Rangers. And I used to leave every day at like 3-4 o'clock, and I'd say, yeah, I'm going to referee, St. Francis, I'm going to referee, wherever. And Rudy Manassian was the one who said, hey, you ever think about going to umpire school? Because my dad works for the Texas Rangers, and if you like officiating, you should go to umpire school. And I was 22 years old.
Okay.
I remember like it was yesterday. And I was like, umpire school? What are you talking about? I didn't even think it was a real thing. But I started looking into it, and at 23 I went.
So you were still in law school. I'm sorry, what was that friend's name again? Rudy?
Rudy Manassian.
Is it Manassian?
I don't know. He just suggested it.
Okay.
I would tell you this. If you're looking to really go, like this is kind of a funny story. And, Steve told me just to be frank with you and tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Dan, you can trust him. Tell him. So this is how it went down. So Rudy about it, and she went and bought tickets to a Cubs game without telling me. And I showed up to class, and she goes, let's go, come on, we're not going to class today. I got a surprise. I said, okay. So we went to the Cubs game. We were sitting right behind the first base dugout, and I'll never forget it. She said to me, she goes, look at those umpires and tell me, can you do that job?
Mm.
And I said, I absolutely can do that job. And she goes, I think you need to go to umpire
school. Wow.
And then at the time, I was dating who is now my wife, and I went home and I told her, I said, you know, I think I want to go to umpire school. And she said, umpire school? She's like, why? You don't umpire? I said, I don't know. It's interesting. I said, I really want to pursue it. And then I sat down with both my parents, and I said, this is what I want to do. And the only instruction I got from my parents was, they said, we will support whatever you do as long as you finish law school and pass the bar.
Oh.
That's all they required.
Okay.
And I said, okay, no problem.
Hmm. So you were in your third year of law school at that point?
At that point, that was the spring of my second year. And then once I made the decision, because umpire school is only in January.
Yeah.
So once I made the decision, I then went to the dean of academics, and I said, I need to be done with law school by January. The normal progression was going to be the fall semester, spring semester, graduate. Well, they said, if you want to graduate a semester early, you need to take, there was like two or three classes in summer school, and then there was an accelerated trial advocacy class over Christmas break.
Wow.
So I did that. I graduated a semester early. I went to umpire school, and then I actually flew home in the middle of umpire school to walk and get my diploma.
Oh, boy.
In law school.
Great story. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was all kind of, yeah, it was a lot of balls in the air.
Yeah.
But pretty cool.
So, let's talk then about umpire school. Which school did you go to, Dan?
I went to the Wendell Stitt Umpire School.
Yep. And what was that like? Was it more difficult than you expected, or?
Well, to be quite honest, I kind of went in uninformed as to how to become a major league umpire.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that there were four levels of A-ball. I didn't realize that guys would be in the minor leagues for 10 plus years.
Right.
I was kind of floored by that. And the amount of money that they made, and it was pretty challenging for me because I have student loans, and my girlfriend, I met my wife in college, so she was my girlfriend through law school, and then my girlfriend through umpire school, and my girlfriend through the minor league. So I've been with my wife for 12 years,
uh-huh.
Married for 12, been with her for 15.
Uh-huh.
So from a financial standpoint, it was very challenging.
Yeah.
And that was the toughest part for me with umpire school, but one of my best friends to this day, if not my best friend, I met him at umpire school. He's an Italian, Vic Carapazza.
Oh, sure.
And so, yeah, so Vic and I climbed the ranks together, and we're both now full-time Major League umpires, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. So I want to talk about the process of getting to the major leagues, even once you get out of there. Do you know how many from your class at the umpire school made it to the big leagues?
From that class, there was, I think there's myself, there was Victor. I know at the other umpire school had Lance Barrett, who made it. We have me, Vic, Mark Ripper. There's at least three from my class.
Out of how many?
The other class has, out of 150 students.
Yeah.
Out of 150 students, the three of us made it. I'm trying to think if there was anyone else.
Well, but in any case, the odds were stacked against you, obviously, with those numbers. Did you ever get discouraged along the way? I mean, even when you got out of school?
Oh, without question. My first year in the minor leagues was 2003, and I was in the New York Penn League, and I didn't have time to take the bar exam yet, so I was making very little money. The supervisors don't really know you that well when you first get started, and I was trying to downplay the fact that I had gone to law school. I didn't really want that to be. I didn't want people to think I wasn't serious. So
right.
I kind of kept that very private. I didn't tell a lot of people that I had that background. But meanwhile, I really wanted to take the bar exam. So that first year, out of 45 umpires, I was ranked like number 31.
Mm.
And I remember thinking like, that can't be right. I mean, I was a little older than a lot of the kids. A lot of them were 18, 19, and it turned out that one of the reasons I was ranked low is because my league president had an issue with the guy I was partnered with, and I kind of got lumped into that category, and they didn't really know me. So my first year, I wasn't ranked that well. I considered retiring then and focusing on law because I thought, I'm in the lowest level of the minor leagues, and they're ranking me 30th, and the odds of making it to the big leagues are so slim. But then I got a phone call from Harry Wendelstedt, and Harry asked me to be an instructor at his school, which was that was a big honor.
Oh, wow.
Big, like, that kind of puts your star on the map. Like,
yeah.
Almost, I would say the majority of major league umpires were asked to be instructors at some point.
Yep.
So I made the decision I'm going to give it another year. And I went to Wendelstedt Umpire School, and then I made the decision. I'm like, all right, I'm invested in this thing, and I'm going to do it. So I'm going to give it all I've got. And then to circle back and close the loop with you on law school, I needed to pass the bar. And the difficult part of passing the bar is, as you know, the preparation. So
right.
In 2006, when the minor league umpires went on strike, I used that as an opportunity to lock in, take the prep course. So while the umpires were on strike, I studied and passed the bar.
Nice. Very good.
So it was pretty, you know, the timing of it was, like, I've had a lot of people ask me, hey, you graduated law school January of 2003. You know, why didn't you pass the bar in 2003? And it's like, well, because I went to umpire school, and I was completely invested in that, and I didn't have a chance to take the bar until 2006 when we were on strike.
Wow.
So the strike really benefited me. Some people have strike babies, you know, like they have kids that they're like, yeah, we were on strike and they had a baby.
Yeah.
I passed the bar. That was my strike.
Very nice. So how long did it take you to get, I know you were called up in 2008, not full time yet, so how much time between that first year in A-ball and getting called up?
Okay, so I worked my first game in 2008, and that year I worked one game. It was at Wrigley Field. It was an emergency situation, and they called and said, we need you right now. So that was a big break. You know, getting the first call is one of the toughest things to get.
Yeah.
So once I got that under my belt, in 2009, they gave me, I think it was 32 games. And I worked 32 games where I was, I'd go to a crew for like 3 days, and then I'd go back to the minor league. So it was sporadic, which is pretty common where, back then at least it was common, where they want you to get your feet wet, then they send you back to the minor leagues and kind of catch your breath.
Yes.
So 2009, I worked 32 games. 2010, I was up the entire year, basically. I worked with Joe West for 5 months of the six-month season. Had a great year with Joe, and then I was hired full-time during spring training of 11. So by the start of 2011,
What do you remember about that first game at Wrigley?
I remember getting the call at, I live in Crystal Lake, Illinois. I remember getting the call at 5:15 p.m. and the head supervisor, Rich Garcia, telling me, he said, "Where are you?" Because it was an off day in the Pacific Coast League and I had gone home. I said, "I'm at home." And he said, "How long would it take you to get to Wrigley Field?" And I said, "How much time do I have?" And he said, "Game time 7:05. I said, "I'll be there."
Whoa.
So in rush hour, which is typically a 2.5 hour drive, I was driving on the shoulder of the road through the expressway, and I made it there with about 15 minutes to spare.
Wow. So that might have helped. It didn't give you too much time to think about it.
It really did. You're actually spot on. I was, by the time I got there, I was so nervous about getting there.
Yeah.
And by the time I got there, it was a rush. Then it was get out on the field. I worked third base. The game was the Orioles and the Cubs. And, you know, it was, I couldn't tell you if the game was 2 hours or 4 hours.
Uh-huh.
It didn't matter because to me it was, you know, it was game seven of the World Series to me.
Your feet never touched the ground, right?
That's right.
Wow, that's a great story too. So, once you'd started getting called up, is that pretty much an assurance that you will be hired full time?
No.
Yeah.
No. The progression for umpires is a lot different than the players.
Yeah.
So when you get to AAA, you have milestones that you have to achieve. So one of the milestones is you work your first year at AAA, and then at the end of the season, they select you for the Arizona Fall League. And they only take 12 umpires to the Arizona Fall League. Of the 12, about 6 of them are going back for their second year, and 6 of you are new. So that's a big assignment to get.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big milestone. Then once you start working the Arizona Fall League, then your goal is to be assigned Major League Spring Training.
Yeah.
So you're working the Fall League, you're hoping for Major League Spring Training. Then once you get Major League Spring Training, once you get an assignment, which is a big deal because that's your first taste of making much better money than you make in the minor leagues, because Major League Spring Training pays Major League money.
Mm-hmm.
So once you work your first Major League Spring Training, then you hope that they add you to the roster, which means, Larry, that they give you a number. They assign you a number for your sleeve, and that's a big deal. Now, like Steve Palermo, back in the day, they would, the National or the American League would purchase a contract for the umpire.
Right.
They would own the rights. This is the equivalent of owning the rights.
Okay.
Once they give you a number, you are officially on the roster and eligible to fill in.
Got it. Interesting. So,
and my first number was 93. They gave me 93 when I first got a number. And then when Jerry Crawford retired in 2010, and I was added to the staff in 11, Jerry Crawford was an umpire that I very much looked up to, and I called Mr. Crawford and I asked him permission to put in for his number, and I promised him, I said, "You wore it for 20 years or 30 years, I'll wear it for the next 30.
Whoa.
They switched me to number 2 in the 2012 season, and I'll be number 2 until I retire.
Very good. Well, you mentioned one name there. Were there mentors along the way that helped you as you were going through the process?
Without question. There's Steve Palermo's a mentor, Jerry Crawford's a mentor, Joe West is a mentor, Tommy Allian, mentor, Phil Cuzzi, mentor, just some wonderful people. Jerry Crawford, I got to work 2 weeks with him before he retired, just an incredible human being, incredible umpire. I mean, Jerry's family, his brother was a longtime NBA referee. Yeah, these are guys that taught me early on that this is a life. Incidentally, I was hired March 9, 2011, the way March 9, 2012.
So once you get to the major leagues, let's say full time or even before, was it what you expected? Were there any surprises?
It's difficult to, I wouldn't categorize them as surprises because I kind of pride myself on trying to avoid being surprised. You know, I ask a lot of questions. I try to prepare. For me, the biggest incentive for me was the security for my family because I wanted to have a big family. I come from an Italian family. I want to have a big family. I've got four kids. For me, it was the benefits, the insurance, the pension. You know, you're part of something pretty awesome. It's, Major League Baseball is an incredible family to be a part of.
Yep.
So, I mean, surprises, I really wouldn't use that word. There were, after a while, does it become a job? Well, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain aspects of it, but the best way I can put it is this. The amount of money we make very good livings, and we're very blessed. Umpiring is the easy part.
Mm.
When we walk on the field, it's the easy part. They don't pay us to umpire. We love umpiring. What they pay me to do, they pay me to leave my family.
Uh-huh.
They pay me to miss birthdays. They pay me to miss, milestones in my family. Whether it be my grandparents' anniversary, and it doesn't fall on a vacation week for me. To me, that's the sacrifice that we make.
Yep.
But the umpiring, the game itself, the challenge of going out there and doing a good job and getting your plays right, being in the right position, I love that. I love every aspect of it. But the money that I make is because I have four kids at home and they pay me to leave them to go do my job.
That's an interesting way to look at it, yeah. Well, when you did first come up, did the managers or players kind of test you, if you know what I mean, to see?
Absolutely.
How, in what way? How did that happen?
Well, no different than players. When you're new, they kind of push the envelope. They want to see how much you'll take. So, they're kind of gauging you.
Yeah.
See, okay, does this guy have a quick temper or a short temper? Is this guy afraid to yell back? Does he yell back quickly? I would say that the testing is probably the first 5 years of your career, you're establishing your reputation.
Uh-huh. For 5 years, wow.
I think it's about 5 years, and I would say 5 years is probably a good way to look at it, because you don't see everybody that often.
Yeah.
So, it's about 5 years, and people start to get to know you, and once they get to know you, and they understand you, and they understand you're not somebody that, you care about your mistakes, you care about doing a good job, you care about representing the game, and integrity will not be compromised. I'm very matter of fact when it comes to doing my business. I want to go out there, work as hard as I can, leave it on the field, and after the game's over, listen, we're all human beings, we're all fathers. I mean, you've seen in the paper, there's been tragedies this offseason. I mean, young kids making tragic mistakes and accidents and losing their lives. Life is too fragile.
Mm-hmm.
So, from my perspective, I think that you get to know a lot of these players, and these players get to know you, the managers get to know you. And, for example, when I came up as a fill-in, Joe Torre was the manager of the Dodgers.
Yes.
And so my first interaction with Joe Torre was as the manager of the Dodgers. And I umpired games with him. Well, it just so happened that Joe Torre, you know, another great Italian American, he took a job at the end of 2010. He took a job in the commissioner's office,
right,
in which he took over the umpiring department. So I was hired full time by Joe Torre. So one of the first things Joe Torre did was hire me, which, you know, I'd like to think that the experience that he had with me on the field, you know, he understood that I went out there, I worked very hard and did my best and, you know, carried myself a way that he knew that he, I would never embarrass Major League Baseball. But, you know, it's pretty awesome for me to say that a Hall of Fame manager, Joe Torre, is the one who hired me, you know, to be a Major League umpire right after he was a manager.
Yeah.
It was like one of the first things he did, and he said it to me. Because one of the first things I ever did when I took the job was hire you.
Hmm.
I said, I'll never let you down.
That's quite a tribute, it really is.
Yeah.
Were there, and I don't know if you want to answer this question, but were there particular managers or players who tested you more than others?
there always will be.
Yeah.
I never say something negative about, you know, players are competitive, or competing, you know, managers are competing. They're under a lot of pressure. And it's our job to be that calming influence, to be that neutral voice, to, you know, enforce the rules. And, you know, if you're talking to a lot of players, I want you to put this in your mind, because this is really, it's changed the way that I've umpired. There's two things I look at. Number one, I was always told, umpire as though my kids are sitting in the front row watching me.
Mm.
So that everything I do, I don't ever want them to be embarrassed of me. You know, that's one thing. The second aspect that I say when it comes to umpiring is players nowadays, you know, they're making tremendous livings. They're under huge scrutiny. The managers are under incredible pressure. And we are the only people in their lives that really tell them no.
That's right.
So, you know, you have to kind of appreciate the fact that these guys they're surrounded by people that tell them yes to everything.
Yeah.
I expect them at times to not like to be told no.
Of course.
I expect them to be upset. And, you know, it's just human nature. I understand my role. I understand, you know, my part of the game. Fans aren't going there to see me. So, you know, these guys are competing, and when you see them make incredible plays and you see them do something, I mean, there's some times you just shake your head, you're like, I don't know how the heck he did that.
Yeah.
But that's why they're major league ball players. And likewise, I think there's a lot of people that, you know, from an umpiring perspective, they say, man, I don't know how that umpire was where he was. Well, that's why we're major league umpires. There's a reason that being on that field, we've all been blessed. Being on that field is an honor to walk on a major league field. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Do you think, is there something or more than one thing you think that, let's say the ordinary fan just doesn't know about umpires and what they do?
I don't think that ordinary fans have any idea or appreciation for the amount of scrutiny that we put on ourselves.
Yeah.
And the commissioner's office, every pitch that we call is tracked and graded. Every play that we make is tracked and graded. And at the end of each season, we're given evaluation. We're given a mid-season and an end-of-season evaluation. And they track all of our calls. Any signal we make, you point a ball fair or foul, they clip it in the video and it's sent to us. So we are graded at such a high level that the most disappointing thing to me is, you know, and I don't watch SportsCenter. I really don't. If I watch a game, I don't listen to the announcers. It's just, when you hear announcers say, he made that call, it's a makeup call, or, he made that call because He must have dinner reservations, or he just wanted to get out of here. But that's never true. Because I can tell you, if I make a mistake, it's rated against me. And at the end of the year, my mistakes are tallied. And so if I miss one call, and the theory of a makeup call, that doesn't happen. Because now I'm missing two calls.
Yeah.
So now I'm compounding the problem. So, you know, I think the biggest misconception is people are raised to kind of hate the umpire.
Of course.
But, you know, we're fathers and we're human beings and, you know, we're not infallible. We make mistakes, but we are, for the most part, we are really good people. I mean, my colleagues are great people. And, you know, we kind of carry ourselves in that way where we don't expect to be the show. We don't expect to be the story. We just, you know, we're privileged to be a part of the game. And at the end of the day, if we've done a good job, you know, we're happy. And, you know, most crews that I'm on, you know, we like to hug after a game and, you know, you get through it. And we've had difficult days, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
Some days are more challenging than others, and some games are very intense. And when they're over, it's a relief. You're happy. You got through it. It was a tough game, and you did a good job, and you're proud. And for me, you know, making my parents proud is paramount. And then for all the people that helped me get to this position and working my butt off, those are the people that I continue to try to get better every day for, because I don't want anyone to ever say they made a mistake in helping me.
Yeah. Well, as an umpire, you're now under more scrutiny than ever because of instant replay.
No question.
What do you feel about that whole process?
Well, instant replay is a different animal because it's somewhat new. So, yeah, I can tell you that since I was in the major leagues only for about 5 years without instant replay, I feel as though instant replay brings its advantages and its disadvantages. Mm-hmm. I think the advantages of instant replay are obviously the days of having an umpire's career be defined by one missed call are gone. And that is the one true advantage, because there's a litany of umpires that are defined by one call, whether it be the Jim Joyce perfect game call, the Don Dankinger World Series call, the Rich Garcia Yankees Baltimore call. There's all of these calls that unfortunately a 30-year career and you're remembered for one thing. That's not fair.
Right.
So instant replay righted that wrong. The downside of instant replay, obviously, it takes away some of the excitement, in my opinion, because you'll have a close play at the plate. You call a runner safer out, and the crowd would erupt.
Yes.
And now it's like a delayed eruption.
Yes.
Like, okay, let's watch the replay.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because I can't have it both ways. I can't tell you that I don't want to be defined by a missed ball and not have the ability to fix it. But what it also takes away is it takes away the art of arguing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's eliminated that manager jogging out and the excitement of the manager arguing. And I really enjoyed the arguments. I enjoyed the dialogue because
everybody does.
It was fun at times. And you know what? I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I won every argument I was in. I mean, my call was my call, but there were times that a manager would get me, and I'd be like, "Man, he's right." and you just, you know, you hold your ground, but you acknowledge, you're like, "I hear what you're saying."
Yeah.
Like, you know, if I had the ability to go back, I might change my answer, but this is the call I made, and I'm sticking with it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that to me was like an artist.
Yeah.
You know, handling managers, handling players, and ejections haven't gone down, but now they're mostly over just balls and strikes.
Yeah, I think fans miss that too. I know I do. It takes away some of the human element of the game. And it also breaks up the rhythm of a game sometimes too. But
yeah, the true fans miss it. But you know, I think that the downside of baseball becoming such a big business is these players are paid so much money and they want their product on the field.
Yeah.
And so the ejections, you know, when you go back and you look at ejections, I mean, obviously we've all ejected somebody maybe a little too soon. Other times we've ejected them a little too late or not at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand the logic. If you've got a superstar and it's the second inning of a game and you call him out on a close play and he gets upset and he says something that's ejectionable and you eject him, I understand that. That's a pretty valuable asset that is not on the field for that team. I get that. And, you know, I don't ever look at ejecting as being, you know, just an easy conclusion to make. You know, my goal is to try to keep them in the game. If they cross the line, they cross the line.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I would never want to have somebody say, oh, the White Sox would have won that game had umpire Bellino not ejected, you know, Abreu.
Yeah.
You know, I don't wanna affect the outcome of games. I wanna be impartial, I wanna be fair but firm.
The assumption, I think, for most people is that the player, if he says the magic word, that's kind of automatic. Is that fair to say? Is that true?
Yes. I wouldn't call it a magic word. I would call it if they focus on you. Okay, if they make it personal.
Yeah, yeah.
And, for example, Larry, I can tell you, Larry, that call was terrible. That call was, you know, without using the language that's mostly used, you could read between the lines, but Larry, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, that's a terrible call. Versus, Larry, you suck.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a clear as day, black and white. Argue the call, argue my position, argue my judgment, argue the decision that I made. But don't say you were lazy, you didn't care,
yeah,
or you're just flat out terrible. That's when you say, no, I won't put up with personal abuse. I will definitely defend my call and allow you the opportunity to voice your displeasure. I will definitely do that. But don't question my integrity, and I won't question yours, because I realize you're competing.
But if you did that, you'd lose their respect too, wouldn't you? I mean, if they knew they could get away with that.
Absolutely. And actually, to take you one step further, and this is what was taught to me by all of my mentors, and still to this day, if I stand on the field and somebody was to verbally berate me personally, and they were to take the approach of, you're terrible, you don't deserve to be on this field, you know, you never should be here, and I just stood there and took it, it's not that person's respect that I just lost. It's the other 49 players that are sitting around there saw it. It's the managers, it's the coaches, it's my colleagues, the other three umpires. Those are the people that lose more respect, because the person yelling at me, you know, for them to say those things and do those things, it's like, okay, they're in the heat of the moment, but we've seen it. And I'm sure in your years of being a fan, you've seen it where you're like, man, I can't believe that guy stayed in the game. And ultimately, you look at the umpire and you're like, why do you let him get away with that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, without knowing what's being said. Now, don't get me wrong. I've had situations. Robin Ventura was a great one. Robin Ventura loved to come out and loved to say, Dan, I think you got this play right. But everybody in this stadium wants to see me, you know, on the bus. So I'm going to point over at second base, and now I'm going to point at first base. And now I'm going to point Eagles. And then I'm going to point back to first base. Because everybody here needs to think that I'm upset with you. But I'm not. And that type of thing, you know, and that happens a lot. A lot more than people know. And so it may look like we got yelled at and didn't do much, but, you know, sometimes you don't know. And really, I mean, if you ever pull up some of my ejections, I have ejections where I don't say a word. I just sit there and it's like, okay, like I can see the guy wants to get ejected. You just can tell. He wants to get ejected. He's trying to fire up his team. Okay, no problem. You have a job to do. Do your job. That's fine. I have a job to do. Okay.
And he's gone.
Yeah. It is what it is. I mean, and then, you know, after the game, when we shower up and we're walking out, we see him in the hallway. Hey, see you tomorrow.
Right. Well, you can't carry it over till the next day, right? I mean, either as an ump or as a player. That's the worst thing.
No.
Yeah.
That's the worst. Every day's a new day.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in the wrong business. Because, like I said, you miss a call today, it's raised against you. You miss a call tomorrow, it's raised against you.
Yeah.
You don't want to get in the reputation of missing calls, and you missed the call on purpose. That, to be quite honest with you, in my entire major league career, I've never seen anybody miss a call on purpose.
Right. Well, from everything you've said, Dan, it sounds to me like you feel now that you made the right decision to become an umpire.
Well, it's easy to say once you're in the big leagues, Larry.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, with hindsight,
in hindsight, I'm a genius. But, there was 8 years there where there was a lot of people questioning, like, what the heck is he doing?
Of course.
And, you know, my wife is the one who fielded the majority of the questions because she was a school teacher and, you know, making ends meet wasn't necessarily the easiest at times. I mean, I worked, when I was in the minor leagues, I worked for a funeral home, and part time I drove like the flower car, I drove the hearse. I worked for a funeral home part time. I refereed basketball. I substitute taught. All these, I had these jobs until I passed the bar.
Uh-huh.
And then once I passed the bar, I focused on law. So, you know, for my wife, people would say to her, your husband's a lawyer, and he's umpiring in the minor leagues, and he's working these side jobs. And, you know, a lot of people, it didn't make sense. So she took a lot of the criticism. But as soon as I started working in the big leagues, everybody, you know, fell right in line. Oh, he's a genius.
Right.
What a great job.
Do you know of any other umpires who have had law degrees?
I don't.
Yeah. You know, there have been managers like Tony La Russa, John McGraw. I think there are 3 or 4 or 5, but I've never heard of an umpire. Yeah.
No, I hesitate to say I'm the first because I honestly don't know the answer to that.
But you don't know of any.
I don't know of any, but I venture a guess to say that I probably won't be the last.
Yeah, well.
This game rarely has, you know, one of anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, right now, I'm pretty sure that there are more Italian-American umpires in the major leagues at any single time in the past. I mean, there are, what, 9 of you now, right? I mean, that's quite a number compared to what it has been.
I don't know if that would be true, though. I mean, you'd have to go back and look because back in the day, there was a lot of Italian umpires.
Well, there were over time, but I think at any given time, I mean, I look back at this quite a bit, and you always, you know, like Augie Donatelli, you had guys that stood out, but there weren't there weren't a lot of them at one time as there are now, I don't think. Which is good.
Well, part of that could be that the staff has expanded. I mean, there's 76.
Well, there's that.
Now.
Yeah, that's true. But, well, is there anything that, you know, I want readers to learn something about umpiring that they didn't know, or is there anything else that I haven't touched on you think that we should about your job or whatever?
I would say the amount of respect that I personally have for those that have umpired before me, for the representatives of Major League Baseball who are entrusted to supervise us and to rate us and to develop us into being the best that we can be. I personally have a tremendous amount of respect for the position that they're in, because this is a really hard scale that you're graded on at the Major League level. Everything's on video. I would tell, if a reader was reading about me, and I don't think I'll ever write a book, Larry. I just don't. It's not in my nature. When I retire, I want to go spend time with my family. I want to go be with all the sacrifices I make as a father, I want to be, twofold better as a grandfather.
And
that's really what this thing is about. And we sacrifice a lot to do our job, and everybody does. And I don't care what you do in your life, we all make sacrifices. But what people need to understand is that traveling the country, staying in hotels, and being part of this great game of baseball is a privilege. And for me, I don't think that will ever change. I don't think I'll ever get to the point where I don't view it as a privilege. I don't think I'll ever get to the point where I don't appreciate the good fortune that I've had to be in this position. And if that day were to come, I think that would be my sign, okay, it's time to retire and go home. The crazy thing about umpires is that when they retire, it's usually because their body's taking a beating.
Yeah.
There'd be too many head blows, the knees, the back, the neck. Too many guys go because of that. And I want to be able to leave with good quality of life.
Of course.
But the guys that retire, this year we had four guys retire. I guarantee you, they all four love umpiring.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, they got older.
Yeah.
They're in their 60s and it's a young man's game.
That's a long time, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, this has been wonderful. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time and being so articulate. Very much like my interview with Steve. Just both of you have been terrific. So
Steve is an incredible human being, Larry.
Yeah, I'm very impressed. I mean, I've followed him, of course, for many, many years, and one of the best known and best Italian-American umpires, and for him to come back from what he did is remarkable, very impressive.
Well, let me tell you this, from a young umpire, and this isn't just because I'm Italian, and this isn't just because he was one of the supervisors that supervised me through the minor leagues into the big leagues. I'm going to tell you something, and you can tell Steve I said this the next time you talk to him.
Okay.
Steve Palermo had a very short career on the field.
Right.
But you ask anybody that ever worked with him or worked in that era, and they all say Steve Palermo would have been a Hall of Fame umpire.
Yeah.
He was that good.
Yeah.
He was that good. He just, some guys have it. Some guys were born to be umpires. Steve was one of them.
Yeah.